Hello and welcome to the Leeds Like Blues podcast. You're joining me, your host, Brother Matt Namiria, and with me tonight,
Brother Josh Dockery Turnbull,
Brother Matthew Wharton,
Brother Paul Rogers,
Brother Dean Leach,
Worshipful Brother Saul Nyman,
Worshipful Brother Trevor Bernard.
Welcome, Trevor.
Thank you, Brother
Trevor.
Welcome, Trevor. You're very welcome along on the podcast. Trevor's someone I've wanted to speak to for a long time. Trevor, tell us a little bit about yourself.
First of all, thank you for the invite. Like I said, I got invited by Josh. It's a pleasure to join you on your podcast. Trevor Bernard from St. Philip's Lodge, based in Sheffield at Tapton, if some of you have been there. Currently past provincial steward, grand steward for the province. Currently chair of the stewards at the moment. Finished my term in the chair in June this year. It's gone pretty quick, to be honest. It's kind of flown, especially with the pandemic and stuff like that. I've been through the chair in my own lodge and currently back on the ladder, currently going up towards senior deacon. I'll be in the chair within the next couple of years. I've been a Freemason since 2003. Done quite a bit in my role as a Freemason, but my main role is really enjoying Freemasonry, delivering the charge, doing the tools, and supporting the lodge as much as I possibly can. The other thing is I'm trying to improve communications within the lodge, getting people engaged. And again, this is one of the main aspects of that.
Excellent. And of course, you and I first met, of course, including Josh and Matthew. We met on the provincial engagement group, didn't we?
That's right.
Do you want to give a quick sort of summary of the provincial engagement group and what its role currently is in the?
It's a fantastic group to be part of, actually, because I came into the group just as a representing the stewards. Stephen Ides, who was a member of the stewards, he's also with us. But to be honest, the Central Engagement Group, it's an ideas pool where you've got a number of groups from across the province gathering together, developing ideas, bringing ideas together, and really discussing these ideas to see if they're viable for the province and for the members, for our brethren across the province. The ideas that's come out of the Central Engagement Group's been amazing, to be honest. It starts off with the Like Blues, with the engagement and the vlogs and the discussion groups that they have on a monthly basis that Matthew Wharton has been running. Josh is bringing us all up to speed with IT and technology in terms of the Trello and stuff you can do online, documentation. The fact that Matt brought us online with some of the more wider ideas and expanding those ideas. And to me, I just thought, wow, this is just amazing. It improved my skill as a chair of the stewards to say, look, we need to look, do a bit of navel gazing and look at ourselves and improve how we do things. And it's kind of improved the way we run the stewards as well. So the Central Engagement Group has been a bit of a learning curve for me. It's good to be part of that, but also it's good to be engaging with people such as the Like Blues.
Wow. Okay. Well, any more compliments you want to give us, feel free. take anything we can get.
But that's a lot.
Well, in that case, then let's drink to that. But before we do that, as is tradition, we on this podcast like to try and follow things in the usual Masonic manner. And so I call on Brother Dean. Are we all charging the South?
All charging the South.
And wish for Brother Trevor. Are we all charging the West?
All charging the West.
Brethren, the Queen and the Craft.
The Queen of the Craft.
And tonight I am on the Balvenie single malt, one of my personal favourites. What are we all drinking tonight?
I am on Ibimi by the Wild Beer Company, cranberry, sea salt and coriander sour beer.
I'm on probably my 15th cup of coffee of the day.
Cheshire chocolate porter from Marks and Sparks. Excellent.
Nice. Very nice.
Yorkshire Clear for me.
What have we got there, Paul?
Newcastle Brown. Wow. Beautiful.
Paul, you're on mute. It's usually Saul's job.
I know.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there we go.
Ah, it's been a long day. Bottle of Dock in one hand and a big bottle of Pepsi Max in the other.
Away, man, with that Nutty Brown and that Pepsi Max.
Aye. Aye. Living at large, mixing it up.
Saul, are we drinking anything tonight?
I'm on a nice Merlot tonight.
Ooh, very nice. Lovely. Very nice. Lovely. Right then, so what we'll do now, we'll go over the likes that we've had since our last recording. There's been quite a few. The last recording, we've had a number of brethren from not only from nearby, but also from all around the world who have liked us on our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/LeedsLikeBlues. The rules are simple. If you like us on our Facebook page, we give you a shout out on the podcast. So without further ado, brethren, our likes for the period have been Sean Butler, Mike Jeanette Pakoriek, Roger James, Stuart Oakes, Paul Ord, John Green, Neil Horn, Gary Matthews, David Kenny, Frederick Mungai Njenga, Bruno Gomez, R. Lee Thomas, Tojo Ratavondrahona, John Paul Connery, Andrew David Warren, Mesut Kaya, Malcolm Sparks, Jacques Coeur de Lion, Madiba Tijopi, Lee Wilson, Noel Pangilan, Tomanovic Petar, and Gerard J. O'Donnell. So, brethren, let us raise a glass to our guests. And if I have just butchered your name on the airwaves, I'm very sorry. Please get in touch with us and tell us how to pronounce it. I'm more than happy to rectify that on the next recording.
Matt, right then. Before we go on, I'm going to raise a toast to you on managing to get through that. Well done, mate.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm just amazed how many names that Josh has managed to come up with to try and confuse you.
Well, I think one of the reasons why I probably got through it first time is it's probably the first time that I've kind of just focused on the page and not watched everyone else in anticipation waiting for me to that up. So that's probably, that may be how I managed to get it done. So, but in any case, brethren, welcome. And we hope that you enjoyed the podcast. We hope that you enjoyed our content that we're putting out there, and we aim to continue doing that. So what else is on the order of agenda? Oh, okay then. So Trevor.
Yes.
Spotlight on you. Top three lodges that you have ever visited. It can't be your own.
Yep.
It has to be, by top three, we mean most memorable, really, for you. So what would they be and why?
Before I start anything about this podcast, I've got to say one thing. I was telling my wife about this, and she said, just a bit of advice, Trevor. Don't try and be clever. Don't try and be witty. And don't try and be intelligent. Just try and be yourself. So... So that's what we're to be tonight. Okay, so I'll leave it at that. But based on your question, Matt, the top three lodges that I visited that stick out in my mind, I'll try and give a reason why, a bit of rationale behind that as well, is first of all, it would be Fitzwilliam Lodge in Rotherham. They've been going through a torrid time at Fitzwilliam, and they were on the cusp of actually closing their lodge and handing in the warrant at one point. They really battened down the hatches and got together, and they made sure that they could actually move from where they were, the location, which wasn't very good apparently, to a better location, and they moved to the Rotherham Golf Club. They turned themselves around. The whole setup is absolutely amazing. It feels like a grand lodge. It feels like a fantastic place to hold meetings, and the feeling and brotherly love that you feel in that place is absolutely amazing. So to me, Fitzwilliam is up there, Rotherham. The meeting that night was absolutely amazing. The ceremony also. The next one for me was the first meeting of the summer after the summer break, and it was at Gull, the meeting at Gull. I'm not sure if anyone's been to that meeting, but the first meeting that you'll see in the summer. And the worshipful master that night, he's a jazz musician. And I'm going cold now thinking about his Happy Have We Met at the end of it. The way he played it, in a jazz style, and everything he played during that night, he played all the music. He moved from his chair and played all the music within the church, within the lodge room, and that was absolutely fantastic. It was just such a refreshing thing to see, this modern take on Freemasonry, and everybody thoroughly enjoyed it. So it's something that's going to be on my calendar for the rest of my Masonic career, that I will go to Gould Lodge, and just, even if he's not there, I'll be going, because it left such a big impression on me.
Awesome.
That's cool.
The last one, which is kind of dear to where my previous employer is, the Fire Service Lodge in Stratford-upon-Avon. And the Fire Service Lodge has four meetings a year. I'm just in the process of becoming a member of that lodge, because you don't have to become a member until you want to. But now I feel I've got more time to participate in that. I'm now going to join Fire Service Lodge. And it's just the first time that I ever saw firing. And I didn't know what to do. that's the crux of it. I just didn't know what to do. So the Fire Service Lodge to me was the first time. It was a refreshing change from the normal. It was emulation, so it was different from what we're doing from the Sheffield Ritual. And really, it was a totally different change from what I've been doing in my own regular lodge. So, yeah, if I'm going to say the three, it's Fitzwilliam, it'll be Gould, and it'll be Fire Service Lodge.
let's raise a glass then to those lodges, so to Trevor's lodges.
Trevor's lodges.
Trevor's lodges.
Thank you.
You're picking up a pattern here, Trevor. There's quite a lot of drinking involved in this podcast.
Yeah, I might have to get another couple of bottles, I think.
Right, so the one big question I want to know about that, though, about the fire service lodge, Trevor, is for a tireless sword, do they use an axe like what you've got behind you there in your office?
No, they actually use a sword. They actually use a sword. Which, you know what, it's not a bad idea, Matt. You're full of ideas, aren't you? That's what I mean. It's just, brilliant.
I mean, I just want to turn it to a lodge and see someone with an axe outside. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be good.
I was thinking a riot tool.
Yeah. They call them hooligan tools, actually.
Yeah,
But I tried to get one in chromed in like a gold colour twang on the wall, but they said that might look a bit too much, Trevor. So they just gave me an axe, which I thought looks even worse.
For the initiations and that, do you have to use a water cannon from an engine? You spray them down with a water cannon.
I'm not going to tell you anything about the initiation. The secret.
I just have this image of the worshipful master wearing one of the white hats, you know, the ones that the sergeants
gold commander.
Yeah. No, it's a good idea though, but I might take that one forward. But no, that acts as a gift from a good friend of mine in the fire service. He teaches the fire service sign language, and I introduced that into the fire service, and he just knew that there was just something about me, apparently. And he said, look, can I just give you a gift before you, on your retirement? And he gave me the axe and melted it all for me. And it brought tears to my eyes, to be honest. It really was emotional when he gave me that, because you only get those if you're a decent sort of guy, and it was very emotional.
Awesome. Well, I'll raise a glass to that anyway. Hey, fellas.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers to you, my brother.
I mean, I think the fact that you've introduced sign language into the fire service is fantastic. My uncle's deaf.
Yeah.
My uncle's deaf. And just the idea that, you know, the emergency services are trained to respond to that properly is...
Yeah. And to
be true,
Josh, it's been taken on fully by the firefighters because they can see how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
When they've been in situations where they've had to converse and communicate, and it's been difficult at first. And now we've introduced basic sign language into the fire service through community safety, which I was responsible for. They've embraced it, and it's just basic stuff. Going through the A, B, C, D's and E's, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's vowels and making sure you know the letters and stuff, and then conversing accordingly. And then it was just good to see the crews embrace that and Phil delivering that across the brigade. It was fantastic. So, yeah, it's a compliment to the service and a compliment to Phil.
I think everyone should learn BSL for one simple reason. It'd make ordering a busy bar infinitely easier.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's true.
You know, doing the lean in and having to shout directly in someone's ear.
Yeah.
Imagine just being like, you know.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea, that, actually.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the main topic of the evening, which, of course, is the provincial stewards, first of all, as pointed out by Wish Your Brother Saul, it is, in fact, at the time of recording, St. Wilfrid's Lodge. What number St. Wilfrid's Lodge again, Saul?
Goes to Google.
6395, according to this.
So St. Wilfrid's Lodge number 6395 is their birthday today. And so let's raise the glass and say happy birthday, St. Wilfrid's Lodge.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Okay then. So we move on to the main topic of the evening, which is all about you, Trevor. And we're going to be talking about the Provincial Company of Stewards. So we know them as quite a rare sight in the occasional red apron that you might see. So rather than the light blue apron or the dark blue apron, we instead see a maroon coloured apron. Tell us a little bit more about the Provincial Company of Stewards. How do you get there? What does it mean to be a provincial steward? And what is expected of a provincial steward when you are granted that rank?
Okay. Before we go to the first question, I'll just give a bit of plot of history where it's actually originated from, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
You'll see these stewards across the province wearing the red aprons, and they stand out like a sore thumb. And many people ask, where the hell have you got that apron from? And you look at them quizzically, so, well, it came from the province. But The apron itself's got a massive history where it's a prestigious position to hold within the province. It denotes a brother who's been either within the Grand Lodge or Provincial Grand Lodge, and the aprons are slightly different. The Grand Lodge apron's got a thicker bordering around the apron in terms of red banding, and the Provincial apron's got the thinner band around that. It starts off in 1729 when Stuarts were introduced into Grand Lodge. Now, up and down the country, you've got various provinces that have Stuarts lodges. It's been decided within Yorkshire West Riding that we wouldn't have a Stuarts lodge. But that's been looked into within the company of Stuarts to see if any lodges who are going to hand in their warrants, if we could take those warrants over to keep those lodges going. So that's something that we're looking at. But first reference was in 1731, where the company was first introduced. They were introduced into Yorkshire West Riding during the tercentenary year by the current provincial Grand Master, David Pratt. And he thought that we need to have some Stuarts within the province. So he introduced that as part of his tercentenary year. He's the current president of the Stuarts, and our role is to support the province in activities that the province and the rulers pass down to the Stuarts to actually deliver on behalf of the province. Now, this can be anything. They can just say, look, this needs to be done, make this happen. Now, this could be, for instance, the quiz, the initiates nights, the Stuarts evenings, any support to the Provincial Grand Lodge, any provincial meetings that need to be supported, the meetings of the provincial officers, we support them at their meetings. We must attend initiates nights, we must attend installations. So we represent the lodges and the province on a wider basis. But anybody who's made a steward comes from past masters. So they must have been through the master's chair. They've got to have done pretty well at the role. It's not just given to anybody. There's got to be something about you. You've got to have performed well at lodge level, craft level, undertaken various tasks and shown promise that you will progress within the province and demonstrate that fact whilst you're doing your work as a steward. In essence, the stewards are there to support the province. We're not here to look for work. We're here to get work from the province, and they make sure that we do that and we answer to the province. Hence the reason why we're part of the Central Engagement Group. We help out with the almoners. We help out with the new Freemasons coming into the province. And also we try and support everybody we possibly can based on what any objectives that the province wishes to give us.
In terms of your journey then, through getting the first getting the envelope where you opened it up and realised you were going to be a provincial steward. Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that personal journey of you opening that letter, how you felt, and then the journey to actually becoming chair of the stewards?
Well, my personal journey, I fell in, as soon as I became a Freemason, I fell in love with Freemasonry. I just felt that this is the right fit for me. You know what we're like. Before we join Freemason, we think we're super. No, we think we're all supermen. We think we've been picked and selected, and we're brilliant. But we're not. We're just an unfinished article that's ready for finishing. And this is where we come into the rough ashlers, and you become smoothed off until you become a smooth ashler, obviously. But my journey from craft through the chair, I wanted to know it all, to be honest. I wanted to be a massive help to the lodge, deliver the charge as best I can, support the lodging activities as an officer, and also support the members. And that's basically what I did. Went through the chair, then I thought, oh, is that it? And then it was a case of what can I do next? So all I did was support the masters in their chair, make sure that I supported myself and developed myself through chapter, through journeyman's masons, as a journeyman mason in Scotland, and also across the province, just make sure I went visiting different lodges, and that's the reason why I could give you a decent list of people, places that I've visited. But in terms of my own journey, it's been emotional, to be honest. I've found it very emotional. I've met some fantastic people, and I've lost some fantastic people in my time far too early, and this is where we shouldn't be scared of death, because it's another stage in our own development, and that's where that I get that strength from, in terms of an understanding of myself and the spirit within me, and that's what I think it's all about. So moving on, when I got the letter to become a steward, I was shocked. because I didn't know what the hell it was all about. I'm not sure if when I got the letter, it said you were being selected to become a past provincial Grand Steward based on your performance within craft and your enthusiasm and your future abilities, that you should go through to become a provincial Grand Steward. And I was absolutely blown out of the water with this. I went round everybody asking them, what is this, what is this? And they say, no, it's just an acting rank, when in essence it isn't. So you have to research it yourself and find out what it's all about. But it is a prestigious position to be part of as a provincial Grand Steward. You are in a very privileged position. You're working with some fantastic people, working at provincial level, and that sometimes you're working at Grand Lodge level, where you've got to pass on reports and make sure things are sorted ready for Grand Lodge. But provincial level, you are working at a high level. It's a privileged position, to be honest. You feel proud to become to be a steward, because it's the lowest rank within the past provincial stewardship. But you know that the only way is up, but you've got to work for that. It's not just a given that you're going to get the next promotion. And it's not about promotion in my mind. It's about doing a fantastic job for the province and working with fantastic people.
It's about doing a service, isn't it? And obviously it's being able to, it's being able to kind of take yourself from being the head of the lodge as master and have that sort of humility to bring yourself back down to becoming a steward again. So pretty much going all the way back down. So in that itself, it's a bit of a test of character, would you say?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've always been a humble person. I've never been one that feels that they're superior to anybody. I've held positions high up in the fire service. I've held positions as a master in the lodge. But you know that you've got to come down. And that, preparing yourself to come down, is one of the hardest jobs. If you can do that well, and you understand the reasons why you have to come down, then that's a good thing. It's when individuals don't understand that they've got to come from that lofty position down, that they forget where they've come from. And you meet a lot of people who you've met on your journey up, that you've done certain things to on the way up there, that you're going to meet on the way down. And that's not my bag. I'm a team player, and that's how it should be. I think we've all got to be team players within this organisation.
Well, you just said then, though, about treating people well on the way up, because you're going to see them coming back down again. Isn't that the whole thing? Shouldn't you be questioning yourself as a Freemason if you're not treating everybody effectively like you'd be wanting to be treated yourself?
Absolutely so. And that's our job, to challenge those people who do that. I don't like ignoring rudeness or people's poor opinion of people. One of the statements that you'll protect a brother in his absence, and that to me is something that I hold dear. If they're talking about somebody in my presence badly, what they're doing when I'm not there, you know what I mean? So to me, I just think, no, you don't treat people like that. They're your brothers at the end of the day. You're working with them, you're on the square with them, and it's part of your role to treat each other with brotherly love and respect. And that to me is, the word respect is massive.
But don't you think that should be in everyday life, full stop?
Absolutely,
but
yeah.
I'm very much one of these that until somebody's treated me badly, then why should you see a different side to them? And even if they've treated you badly, doesn't mean that that is what they're like as a person. You might just have caught them on an off day or something like that.
Well, the thing is, Saul, on that point then, I always ask myself, right, once is a mistake, twice is foolish. And I think if they've done it once, okay, let's see where this is going. And if they are having a bad day, fair dues. But if they do it again and again, then I'm sorry, that's it. You've got to pull them. And I speak to them face to face and tell them, look, what's your problem? Have you got a problem with me? What is that problem? Is it the obvious problem? Or is there a problem with the fact that you just don't like me? I'd rather you know than I can understand. If there's something that I'm doing that's rubbing you up the wrong way, then I'm not going to apologise for that. That's an issue with you, because nobody else has got a problem with that. I would discuss it with the individual, challenge them, and I've done that all my life. But I totally agree with you. It's something that should be inherent within every Freemason, that they should treat people with respect. They should have that quality with them all the way through Freemasonry. As a Freemason, Saul, I can honestly say that I've heard things and seen things that I found very unpalatable within the Freemasonry that I was I've been shocked to see and hear. And I've had to pull people and they've not realised they've even said anything, which is pretty damn sad.
I also think that what you've done is part of Freemasonry as well. I mean, I think I've mentioned it before, in my lodge bylaws, there's a section in there that actually says that it's the responsibility of each Mason to correct each other when we err. And we all are. Yeah. But what you say is spot on. We need to be there to re-guide and re-point each other.
Admonish with kindness.
Each other.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I think just being a member of the steward over the last 2 years, I think that's something that they've kind of taken on board, the way that it's being led, the fact that you do treat people with respect. We've become such good friends. When I first met the stewards, we didn't talk. For some reason, I went to Leeds and nobody talked to me. I thought, this is quite strange. And it was a factor that when I started going to meetings and we started to discuss and stuff, but you realise it. I think they're just trying to suss each other out, as any group of high-profile people would probably think that. But they're just trying to suss each other out. And then once we sussed each other out and we knew where we were coming from, I think we've got this natural understanding and respect of each other. It's not about rank. It's not about where you're from. It's not about areaism. It's about just being people, being friends, being brothers. We've even got a motto, brothers in arms. That's what we are, because we are together. And it's pretty powerful stuff.
How many of you is there around?
20 at the present time. We're losing some to promotion over the next couple of months. So we've got 23 to 26 members now. So
how does it work then? So obviously you become a provincial steward, and obviously you can't hold that. You can't hold that title forever. The apron, I understand it, you only have it for a certain amount of time. How long is that?
You're asked to become a steward, and then you're asked to keep that promotion for 3 years, unless you're approached for further promotion. Myself and a couple of other stewards this year have declined our promotions based on the fact that we're enjoying ourselves as stewards. And that's pretty good, because again, it just shows, it demonstrates that it's not about promotion, it's about enjoying Freemasonry and enjoying each other's company. And everyone's looking at me gone out when I go to lodge, why have you turned down your promotion? You could have been promoted away from the stewards. I said, well, why would I? I'm enjoying myself, I'm having a fantastic time. We were arranging so many meetings for when we finished with this pandemic, just to go out and get drunk together, you know, just to go out and have a few beers face to face. Have a steward's night where we have a steward's dinner, and it's just about having a good drink, having a good chat and some good food. That's it. No real agenda. Let's just chat. It's Queen's toast to stewards. And we're even inventing a 7-toe salute to the stewards as well.
Fantastic.
You know what I mean? It's something that we're just going to introduce into our festive board as stewards. And I think it's going to be an annual thing that people will want to come to. So
you can count us there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, you'll be coming as my guest. So I just think to myself, look, let's just get ourselves together and let's just enjoy ourselves.
So you're the chair of the Provincial Stewards at the moment, then.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's something that someone in their third year of being a Provincial Steward gets, but or is it not? And how is it an elected position, or is it an honour? I don't know.
It's an elected position. You've got quite a few elected positions. We've even got we just introduced an almoner into our position. So, and that's because there were quite a few stewards who were not turning up. So we said, look, we need to ask, why are these people not turning up? That is beyond the almoner craft level. Why are these stewards not turning up? Because we want them to be involved in the work, because it's just too much work for us to do. You know, the acronym is 20% doing 80% of the work, and it's not right. So we said, right, let's get them back in and let's get them introduced. As a steward that was elected in my first year to deputy steward, because everyone was just really kind of quiet when it came to election. Who wants to be deputy steward for this year? And it was just a deadly silence. And I thought, right, I'll have a go at that. I fancy that. And not knowing anything about the job, not knowing anything about it, I had to then start researching about the stewards. And I took on the role as deputy steward. So I was voting as deputy. And the natural progression is that if you are deputy or assistant, you go into the full role. So that there is always that ladder built, ready and waiting.
Yeah.
The person behind me is currently Jason Moody. He's going to be taking on my role next year, and I'll go on as immediate past chair of the stewards, which I'm not sure is a position, but that's what.
Just make one.
Yeah, just make it up.
Just make it.
It sounds impressive, but it's not. But so that's the way it works. But yeah, it is a nominated role. You are voted into that position, but it comes with great responsibility. I'll tell you that now. The amount of exposure you get from the province in terms of information, what the province actually does, how it works, the inner workings of the province is absolutely unbelievable. When you see the people that's working behind the scenes and what they're doing, it's quite intimidating and quite frightening that you think, wow, I'm part of this massive mechanism that's going off and nobody actually knows. You're all part of that, believe it or not. You're all part of it. We might be small cogs, but the small cogs make this massive machine. We are all part of it. So, yeah, it's a brilliant position, a lot of responsibility, plenty of work coming through. But I think a lot of the time it's about keeping motivation within the group, keeping them motivated, keeping them engaged. Because you know what it's like, it's easy to just drop off engagement and not do anything. You've got to work hard at it. And I'm all about communication.
Yeah.
So your time, obviously, as a provincial steward will, no doubt, within the next year or perhaps come to an end.
Yeah.
After that's said and done, you'll no doubt be keeping in touch with all the provincial stewards that were kind of like in your circle sort of thing, I take it.
Yeah.
And so as you move forward and you see this new generation of stewards coming in, how do you wish to see the stewards progress onto the next level as time moves on?
That's an excellent question, Matt. I brought in a motto, really, once a steward, always a steward. And that, to me, just sums it up. You're never going to lose that red apron because it's your first provincial rank. You may not get past provincial on your first promotion, your first appointment. So this is higher than what you're going to actually get in your first appointment. So it's such an honour to be part of the stewards. But what we've done recently, as a team, we've gone through our constitution and asked the question, who are we? What are we? What are we doing? Where are we going? And we've updated our constitution, and it's been a brilliant piece of work to get people focused, to get the group focused, to make sure that we know exactly where we're going. And it's also brought in the newer members into the stewards who are so enthusiastic about being stewards. We want to maintain that enthusiasm for the 3 years that they're in their tenure as a steward and make sure that they are participating in the events, their allocated roles, their allocated activities to do, and they are responsible for those activities. And hopefully they'll grow within that role and they'll pass on that. As well as that, we're having a database of past stewards, and there's going to be a write-up about each one of those stewards to say, right, what did you actually do? You know what I mean?
Not invite him back.
Yeah, so you can look back and say, this is what I did as a steward, so that the new stewards can come in and they'll see some sort of guidance as to, this is what my role as a steward was. A bit like this blog, I think this blog should go on the stewards database as well and say, look, this is what we did as steward. This is how we did it. This is how we felt doing it. And this is what I've gained as a steward. This is how I've developed as a steward to become a better Freemason. At the end of the day, that's all I want the stewards to become better in their role as Freemasons and become better leaders within the province as well.
Brilliant. You've answered that perfectly, mate. I don't. Yeah. I mean,
that was a really good.
I'm stumped for it to ask anything else now. I'm just okay. Like,
essentially,
I'm shocked myself.
Sorry, we'll change tack.
But essentially, that's bringing you on and just nurturing you into that provincial rank, isn't it? So that you are prepared, really, to be a provincial leader at that point because you've been conditioned all your way through from being a steward. So for me, it's a great progression for people who are showing some great promise within Freemasonry.
To be truthful, Dean, I'm happy within myself. I've done the best I can with what I've got, and I've enjoyed myself, and that's what it's all been for me. I've not been in it for further gain. I'm in it to enjoy myself and see other people enjoy it. When I go to a meeting, a steward's meeting, and I'm getting messages on WhatsApp 2 minutes later saying, what a fantastic meeting, what a brilliant meeting, we need to get together and stuff. And I'm thinking, that's it. That work is done tonight.
Yeah.
And when we're talking to each other, just How's things going, Trev? How's things going, Matt? How's things going, Malcolm? It's brilliant for me. I just think that's what it's all about. It's about building your friendships up, building yourself up as a person, and building this resilience so that you've got people you can actually go back to and help you.
As long as you can hold your head up high, and as long as you've enjoyed it, and as long as you've got something out of it. I said, there was four of us that went down to London for a meeting at Grand Lodge, and we were from four completely different backgrounds, and you will never have met. And like, you take the screen that I'm looking at here now, I'm 48, and I look around, and like, I think that these are some of my best mates. And we've only known each other, well, obviously Matthew and Josh were known each other a bit longer, but Matt, I've only known, what is it, 18 months, something like that, most of which has been on a screen. Yet, you know that you can count on these boys, and that's what it's all about. It doesn't matter where you end up. I've got something out of this. I hate public speaking. I hate being the center of attention. Mm-hmm. And I was master of the lodge. It changed me into a different person, and I think that's what Freemasonry does.
You're right, Saul. And you know what? I echo what you've said. It's not about the gains you're going to get in Freemasonry. The gains are within your heart, within your mind, and within your social circle. It's being blessed with great people around you and surrounding yourself with decent people as well. And I think if you can do that, the rest follows. The rest naturally follows. You don't have to try. You've just got to maintain your standards, maintain your respects, respect others, and lead. That's all you got to do. I've seen leadership in the CEG from various individuals that I look and I think, well, there you go. We've got about 10 contenders for the provincial grandmaster in the next 10 years coming up. So you've got to be looking at the people that you're working with. And with the stewards, I look around myself and I think, wow, there's some fantastic individuals that I work with within the stewards. They engage, they show leadership qualities. They're all not bothered about rank either. They've kind of took on this ethic that I had, that it's not about the promotion, it's about this camaraderie. And they're all on about throwing in the next rank just to keep do the 3 years as stewards.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, I've never seen that, never heard that before. Why are you doing that? And you don't have to. I've done it because I want to do it for 3 years and through this pandemic. But they're thinking, oh, I want to stay and do me 3 years. I want to enjoy me 3 years as a steward. And that's fantastic.
It's almost like it's a highlight of Freemasonry and they want to stay as being a part of it.
Yeah.
And that speaks volumes in itself, really, from something that was born in this province, certainly, very recently in the grand scheme of things. If we've got guys like you, Trevor, in that position, then, you know, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but we can't go wrong, really.
You don't know me, Matt.
Well, yeah, this is a man that has an axe on his wall.
listen, there's a lot of history behind that axe. I've said no when I should have said yes, and said yes when I should have said no. It's experience, I suppose, Matt. It's about experience and having experiences. And if we back away from these experiences, you don't grow as a person. And it's about not being scared. You've got to go in with a bit of courage to understand a situation. You've got to go in and understand people. You've got to look at different egos. Some people's egos need tempering down and some people's need building up. It's not about, it's about developing people at the end of the day, and you develop as an individual. And I've learned so much over my years, Matt. It's been frightening. So, yeah.
The hands are, they're about square. It's a fairly wonky square, to be fair, but it's 9 o'clock somewhere in the world. And so raise a glass to absent brethren.
Absent brethren.
Absent brethren.
Absent brethren.
Absent brethren. I was on mute. Sorry, brethren.
Saul, you on mute.
Stand up.
How about that? I was purposely on mute.
Saul, stand up. He says he doesn't like public speaking, but he's not afraid to tell his worship masters to stand up at a festive board.
No. Oh, that
love it. That'll be edited out, by the way, so don't worry.
Well,
you can leave it in. I don't care.
It's only because I'm 5 inches taller than the worshipful master, that's all.
Some the grand stewards,
yes.
They are, I'm aware that they have a lodge, and their lodge is the only lodge in the under the United Grand Lodge of England not to have a lodge number.
Yes.
Interesting fact.
Yes.
But I just I was reading about them a while back, and because I came across it because the program master actually wears a collar jewel around his neck, and I was trying to suss out what that collar jewel was. And he wears that because he was, I believe, been through the chair of the Grand Steward's Lodge, and therefore it gives him the right to wear that collar jewel in perpetuity, just That's around right. his neck.
Yeah, and he wears it with pride.
He really does. I mean, you see pictures of him in his full regalia as Program Master, still wearing that. So it just goes to show how important the stewards are to Freemasonry at all levels.
And when he attends his lodge, he arrives in his red apron. He's the same rank as everybody else. There's no rank at all. So it's a fantastic lodge to be part of, at Grand Lodge. And the next development within the stewards is to organise a meeting of all the stewards up and down the country. And this is where the Seven Toasts of Luck would come into play, where everybody would be, there'd be tables of wine. That's how we got the red apron, apparently.
I heard that once. I was never sure whether that was true.
Yeah.
Apparently
that's how we got that. Did you like how I brought that in, Matt? it was brought in because after the building of the temple, apparently, there was nobody to serve the wine. So King Solomon, he said, look, let's get these guys as stewards and we'll get them to serve the wine. So anyway, these guys are serving the wine. But nobody could actually tell who were the stewards and who was actually serving the wine. You know what it's like to try and get somebody to bring a drink. Like Josh said, it's sign language, that's even better. So King Solomon said, right, let me call one of these stewards over. Anyway, this steward bringing with him two bottles of wine in his hand, he didn't know how to actually address himself to King Solomon. So in his panic, he did the grand or eagle sign to him with these two bottles of wine in his hand. And obviously the wine went all over his head, all over his face and all over his body. And he ended up with a red face and a red apron. And that apparently is how we got the red apron.
Oh, love that. That's
intriguing. Story.
Believe it or not. I mean, and there is a motto. We have got a motto, which is a bit of Latin, and you might be aware of this one, Matt. Aspectu mio quam mappa rubro quia fortita labore, which is interpreted as, if my face is as red as my apron, it's because I'm working so hard. And that is our motto. That is our motto.
Nice. I think I need one of them. Have you ever seen me running around my lodge at a festive board?
Depends which collar you've got on, Paul. You seem to do about 8 different offices sometimes.
Yeah, but you will see us at the provincial masters meeting in May when we can get face to face. We are the stewards for that.
So do you want to talk to us about the quiz, what it is?
Yeah, the provincial quiz, again, an idea from the provincial grand master. He wanted a provincial quiz to be delivered across the province to involve all lodgers, in essence. We delivered that for the last 2 years face-to-face, where we held the final at Leeds Provincial Grand Lodge, and that ran really well. Because of the pandemic, it's been pretty difficult to get a face-to-face meeting going, so the province has asked the stewards to look at delivering this online, and we've kind of got that settled now. We've kind of got that sorted in terms of an implementation of that. We've got an implementation policy to deliver the quiz online. And hopefully, from this month onwards, we will start advertising that to say that the final will be on the 30th of June, with heats coming at least 6 to 7 weeks before that. So we're going to get that sorted. But it's all going to be run online. It's all going to be pretty. how are we going to get it sorted? It's going to be a bit of a journey. But I've got a lot of faith in the team. I've got a lot of a belief and faith in myself and the team that we will get this done right. And I'm sure that we'll be pulling on some of the expertise I can see on the screen as well to help us with that. But it looks like it's going to be pretty simple to run in terms of the heats. We'll be using a system called MyQuiz to hold that. No.
Josh is going into meltdown for our listeners. Yeah. He's thinking, why are you using this software and not another one?
I must admit, having a timer system is definitely the way ahead when people are sat behind the computer.
Absolutely.
I think he's having
the question, and yeah,
He's also been attacked by a cat right now.
He's having kittens right now.
But my quiz does do that, Dean. It uses a timer system. You can time the questions for 20 seconds and then you move on to the next one. And then it tells you which is the right answer. So, but there's going to be audience engagement. There's going to be some during the intervals while we're marking and checking the stores. We're going to have some guest speakers for 10-minute micro presentations. And then we're going to take it from there.
It's going to be great.
From the Leeds Light Blues to the accompanying provincial stewards, I'd say thank you very much for all the...
Can I take a moment to raise a toast to the current provincial lodge champions? Aurora Lodge, Matt's Lodge.
They were, absolutely. Champions. Yeah.
And it is also the anniversary of their installation tonight.
Oh, wow.
If we weren't in lockdown, they would be having their installation meeting.
Yeah, so. Gutted that I couldn't be there. Obviously, our installation's always a lovely event. It's one of my favourites. It's just such a shame in the situation that we're in. But I'm looking forward to a year's time when I'm sure, hopefully, please God, we'll be back there.
Yeah, well, I'll be there, Matt. I'll be there.
To Aurora 4047.
Aurora.
To Aurora.
Aurora. Aurora.
Has anyone else got any questions?
Guys, can I ask a question? And this is like a big question for me that I've been toying around with for ages. Have I got time to ask this question, by the
way? Always.
Absolutely, yeah, go for it.
What is the problem with... I'm not sure if it's a problem, but it's just an observation of lack of minority members being Freemasons. Silence. Tumbleweed.
You're asking all the white guys.
Is it something that you've observed yourself? Is it something you've seen? Obviously, because there's not many BME members within the fraternity, is there? There's not many.
Can I ask a question off the back of what you've just asked? Obviously, you're talking about black and minority.
Yeah.
I'm Jewish, right? And a lot of the Jewish members that are in Craft are very introvert. They like to be a member of Doyen or Loyalty in Leeds. And that is two predominantly Jewish lodges. People just seem to feel comfortable in their own surroundings almost.
Mm.
And I think there's a certain, I don't know, I always used to think growing up that Masonry was anti-Semitic and it was like a white sort of traditionalist sort of men's club. And maybe that's the way black and minority groups see it. Maybe it needs rebranding almost.
I think you're right, because it's not until you come into Freemasonry and you hear some of the stories behind Freemasonry, some of the names of the lodges, Freedom Lodge, which talks about releasing or removal of slavery across different countries across the world. It's some things, some stories, such as the building of the White House, where they said they couldn't build it because the slaves there that they were using weren't free men. It was things, little stories like that. And I'm thinking, wow, so what is the issue? Is it because it is predominantly white? And it's something that I felt, right, let me see, something made me want to be a Freemason inside. It wasn't the fact that I was scared, it was just something that I felt inside myself. I want to be a Freemason.
I was initiating in a lodge in Belgium, an English-speaking lodge, but it was aligned to the NATO headquarters.
Yeah.
And we had all sorts of people there, a lot of German guys. It was a lot of German guys.
Yeah.
But one of my close friends, he's a Prince All Freemason, so we had quite a few of them. You know, so it was pretty diverse within that arena. Even so, the fact that when I was initiated and that when I first looked around the lodge, from that point of view, it was pretty diverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for all the people that we had, even though it was a military lodge, for want of a better word, but we did have civilians in there as well. And especially, I mean, one of my other lodges as well, we've had Sikh brothers in there as well. So I've not really encountered much diversity. But then again, we've got people with different sexual orientation, age. And for me, Freemasonry is It's all about a bond of togetherness and brotherhood. Mm. And it's not looking at what divides us, it's what's actually bringing us together. Yeah. So perfect. All of these things that, you know, that some people could look at, well, that's a divide and that's a divide. I don't think it really exists in Freemasonry. It's just encouraging all these other people to actually see what we're experiencing and bring them into the fold, really.
And if I may as well, Trevor, why do we not have more Black or ethnic minority members? Well, I guess going back to before I became a member, anytime anyone said to me about a Freemason, I just used to think of two things, bankers and judges.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess in some ways it could just be that there is this expectation that Freemasons are just made up of rich white people, you know? And obviously nothing could be further than the truth. Now, if you go over to other countries, like in the States, for example, everyone who listens to this podcast regularly, and anyone who knows this, and I'm starting to see some laughs already, knows about my tale of woe when I tried to visit a lodge in LA, only to find that my lodge apparently wasn't down in the book that allowed me to gain entry and access. Yeah, apparently I'm a clandestine. Anyway, they had their festive board before the meeting. And when I turned up, I was greeted. I walked into the room and I sat down at a table where there were, I'm just trying to think now, I believe there were three white brothers and there were about six black brothers.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that depending what state you're in, it might differ from state to state. But certainly in California, it's not, you know, there's no disparity between white members or black members or minority members. So perhaps it could just be a more national thing. But who knows? We speculate, don't we?
Mm.
Perhaps I might turn the question around a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
What do you think the reason might be?
I think it's a case of not keeping up with the times, firstly, and I think it's about how it's being portrayed. I think you hit the nail on the head there about bankers and judges, or high profile, very successful businessmen who in the 1960s and 70s were running Firth Browns, your massive steelworks in Sheffield, the massive organisations. They were directors. Very seldom did you have a black director or anyone of colour being a director within a massive organisation, and that's who Freemasons were appeared to be. And I think that is an issue. And I think there's a bit of history in terms of education that a lot of minorities have been informed that were Freemasons part of the slave trade? Were they part of the reasons why they conquered the world? As you know, Illuminati, we're part of that. You know what I mean? So
it's, allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. So I think sometimes we are encasing a lot of bullshit about why Freemasonry is a bad thing to join, when surely we should be promoting the charitable work we do, the way we support each other as brethren, the way we are growing as an organisation. This forum should be actually put up as a beacon to say, look at what these guys are doing. And also identify the Freemasons who have made that step in from the BME background to say, look,
Shaquille O'Neal.
What's that? Yeah. They've all been in there.
The person I was going to mention was His Excellency Kufor, I think his name is, who is the senior Grand Warden, the former President of Ghana.
Yes.
And I believe he's still in post. So please, let's edit that and make sure that I get that right. Yeah. But yeah, again, it shows that it's possible and it can be done as well. There's no blockers in that sense, but obviously to get to senior Grand Warden is don't include this. You've got to be quite senior in life anyway.
Yeah. For me, there's people like Johnson Buhari, DC. He's kind of a figurehead for military people for the fact that he's a living recipient of the VC. He was even on the on one of the military parades
wearing his gloves.
Wearing his white gloves. Yeah. I think he mixed up his normal white gloves, his military white gloves, with his Freemasons white gloves. But he was there, you know. And for me, he's an inspirational person. And it doesn't matter what ethnicity he is, ex-military people or military people would look at him and go, I wouldn't mind being a Freemason just for that. So for me, it doesn't matter what his ethnicity is. It's the fact that he's actually out there and is kind of an inspirational person for people to look up to and think, well, if he wants to improve himself and he's already top of the tree with a VC, then maybe I should look to improve myself and join Freemasonry as well.
Wasn't Duke Ellington a Freemason?
Yes, he was. And Nat King Cole?
Yeah.
King Cole as well. And I think what you've just said there, Dean, is really the way forward in terms of, is it about, should we just not ignore the fact of colour? Is it about just becoming a brother within a fraternity?
And I think it's these sorts of questions, really, which we all need to be honest with ourselves.
Yeah.
And we need to... There is still a feeling in society in general about the term racism that I find, in that some people are uncomfortable talking about it. And I think the sooner that we confront it and actually have that discussion, is the sooner that we'll be able to come to, you know, real resolutions. And a lot of progress has been made, let's be honest.
I don't think you'd have enough time, Matt, and I don't think you've got a big enough screen to fit the view. I think Saul's hit the nail on the head by asking for a webinar, a podcast on the different factors within Freemasonry that may impact on homosexuality, about colour, about gender preference, transgender preference, all these things that's going to impact on Freemasonry in the future, that we'll have to have these tough discussions. And racism, I think, or race, I think, is another massive discussion, Matt, that, like you said, needs to be discussed openly and honestly.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And maybe perhaps we can even... Those other discussions, perhaps we could have that on this podcast at some point. And Trevor, you know what? We'd absolutely love to have you back as well.
That's not a problem.
To maybe join in with that if you're happy to do that.
Then, I'm more than happy. Yeah.
Trevor, I'm on a working group at the minute looking at recruitment. Yeah. Is there anything you think specifically we could do that would help attract more?
Sprinkle it with a bit of colour, Josh.
So get your big shiny.
No, not me, because I was used as that figure for the fire.
You've been tokenized before.
It hurt when it started to hurt, and I think if you look at some of the newer members who are fresh, enthusiastic, who want to be part of that, the new way of thinking, use those members.
How do you do that then? You said you were tokenized, for want of a better word, for the fire service, and it hurt. How do we approach that in a more sensitive manner then?
I think it's about not making them the focal point of the actual projection. It's about making them part of the team. They're not at the front and center. They could be at the side, they could be in the right of it, it could be the behind. It's to show that they are still part of that team. It's same as Saul. If you want to show a Jewish connection, you don't just make that a token gesture by putting them at the front. Make them just part of the team. It's like it's a natural, if it's a photo session, it's a natural position. It's where they want to stand.
I know in Leeds we have like a West Indian Caribbean street pie.
Yeah.
There's nothing to stop us joining that.
The carnival.
The carnival.
How good an advert would that be?
Again, I haven't missed a carnival in 10 years.
Haven't you?
Brilliant.
On the
matter of pride events as well, I know that one individual over in Yorkshire, North and East Riding, they attended one of their pride events with a flag, with the actual logo of their province on there, with rainbow, and they actually went on the march. So I know that has happened at one point. And I think
Leeds like Blues taking part in next year's Leeds Pride.
Yeah,
why not? Absolutely.
When did we get that photo with Gok Wan? When was that, Paul?
Well, that was just before, wasn't
that
it?
That was part of the Pride build up. Yeah.
So, Trevor, one question for you as we are on this topic.
Yeah.
You yourself have been a Mason now since 2003.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you seen any changes in attitudes towards BAME in that time? And have you ever come across anything in your time as a Mason which was questionable to you?
Yes.
That's quite a broad question. And by the way, We don't have to wear this if you're not comfortable.
No, I think it's a good question, Matt, to be honest. And I've got to say yes. It was disappointing to hear and see, to be honest, when you sat across from a table and a brother who you had a lot of respect for comes out with a comment that is absolutely disgusting and derogatory to to say that we have got a brother coming in of colour and calling him a derogatory name is frightening. And then you can then question yourself when you sat at that festive board and within that lodge room with that brother, saying to yourself, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? What am I part of? Why am I putting myself through this?
That was terrible.
With this bigoted person. And nobody challenged him until I waited for about a minute to see if anybody was going to challenge him. And I had to say something.
Was that in your early days as a Mason then?
Yeah,
was it?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
He should be made to resign.
No, well...
Over a comment. At the end of the day, and... This, I never know whether these things sound right, wrong, or indifferent, but if we all cut, we all bleed red. So, what the hell? I know a couple of years ago at Ellen Road, they ran a whole thing about, like, of a certain age, everybody used to call anybody of colour, coloured.
Yeah.
I sort of said that they ran through various colours, and then they said, when you're ill, you're green. When you're embarrassed, you're red. When you're normal, you're white. And you have a sheet to call us coloured. And it just, at the end of the day, it's what's inside. It makes no difference what colour you are. Josh's beard makes him look scary. But apart from that, it should make no difference what you actually look like. It's what's inside and what sort of person you are.
Well, Saul, I totally agree what you just said there, and that was my belief. Imagine my disappointment when I heard that from that person coming out of that person's mouth. And I feel a bit like Meghan Markle here, because I don't want to say anybody's name or say anything, because I think it's totally wrong. It's just an observation I've made. I've kept this to myself for quite some time. I told my wife about it. Told the co-pilot, and I said, look, I'm not sure if this is for me. And this was early doors of my Freemasonry. But I just thought to myself, no, you've got to pioneer this, Trevor, because you're going to have to change opinion and change perception. And I think this unconscious bias that people had was quite strong within Freemasonry at that time. And I think it's a case of changing bias and changing unconscious bias in a way, and changing people's perception of black candidates, that you've got to think to yourself, well, no, you've got to spearhead this and get on with it and change attitude.
Resigned, then it wouldn't have been you that would have won it. It would have been them. Because in their bigotry, they are completely wrong. But if you'd have resigned or really taken you back home to such a degree that you never turned up, and you basically, it would very much allow you to badmouth the order.
Yeah, it would have been. It would have given me a license to up us all. Mm-hmm. And that's in a way why I got that axe, gentlemen. Yeah, because I don't give up. You could blame it on the old excuse. They're from a certain generation. That's why they took. And you think, oh, how long?
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. How long are we going to use this excuse for? It's from the, they're from the 80s, they're from the 90s.
So, yeah. This was a problem in the 80s and 90s. I was there.
Exactly. But the thing is, Josh, in 20 years' time or 40 years' time, and if people from your generation are saying it, there is a problem. You know what I mean? There is a problem. But I just think to myself, no, there is a principle here that you have joined this organisation and you treat everybody like a brother, regardless of colour, nationality, ethnic minority, or creed or religion. You treat them as a brother. That's it.
Yeah. And it does.
Go on, sorry, Matt.
I was going to say I agree with you, and it does feel like that individual at that time needed to be reminded of their obligation and reminded of the working tools and the tenets of Freemasonry, and because. I'm sure everyone on this podcast will agree. I'm quite upset to hear that. Yeah. Well, that was a thing, and I'm not just saying that because it's the thing to say. I am.
No, and when they say I don't see you as black, Trevor, I think, well, I bloody well hope so. But I do honestly, because I'm thinking, well, hang on a bit, you've got to see difference, and people are different. We've got to accept that. We're not equal. There are winners and losers in a race. We're not equal. Let's get out of that sort of mindset. But we are equal in terms of how we treat people. We're 1% different in terms of being a species. 1% different, if that. 99% of the time, we are exactly the same when we built up. Sol said it. Blood, flesh, bone, marrow, everything.
It's definitely more than 99%. I think we're like 99% in common with a fruit fly or something like that.
Might be, Josh. But you know what I mean? We're not far from each other in terms of how we think and what we are as people. I think at the end of the day, we've got to understand, and I think we need this discussion. It's an open discussion, what we need. And it's a bit of a locker room discussion that you, let's put it out there. Let's have this hard discussion. And if people are angry with this discussion, it's going to come out. It will come out. And you'll find these people out because it does come out. And I think, right, I've sussed you, mate. I've exactly found out what you're like. At the end of the day, should it be a case of discussing racism, should it be a case of promoting the values of Freemasonry, brotherly love, relief and truth?
But that's the whole thing that spans across all of Freemasonry all around the world. That's what it's meant to be about.
Yeah.
That's the reason why we supposedly recognise all these different Grand Lodges around the world, including Prince Hall Grand Lodges. The fact that we, as the United Grand Lodge of England, recognise, you know, Prince Hall Freemasons, which the majority of which are built up upon brothers who are black.
Yeah.
The sad truth and reality of it is that once upon a time, there were some Grand Lodges that did not accept black members.
Yeah.
And, you know, how much of a tragedy is that?
There's only one now, Matt, South Carolina.
Is that still actually
there's
a thing?
There's one hanging on now, South Carolina. The rest of them, I think they're on the cusp of voting that remit out. They're going to accept black members. But South Carolina is the only one, I believe.
How sad is that we're now in 2021 and we're still there's still even one that's holding out?
Yeah.
How you know, in terms of I'm kind of getting on a bit of a soapbox here, brother, and so I do apologize. But how sad is it? 21st century, almost a quarter of the way through it, we are still in that position. How has that been allowed to be? That in itself is sad.
We should, as UGLE, we should not recognise that state. And even when they realise their errors, we should still hold back on recognising them as a state. Because
I do believe that is
the case. We can't not recognise them as a state. We can not recognise them as a Grand Lodge.
That's right.
Sorry, yes. Why? Let's just not recognise the state.
Ah, no, there's only 49 states.
I'm with you, Sol.
So, I guess my final question really, Trevor, is,
yeah,
obviously you've spent now, what, 18 years, is it? Like 17, 18 years, mm-hmm, obviously, in Freemasonry, and having gone from that bad experience at the very beginning,
yeah,
to where we are now, have you seen progression?
Absolutely. It's refreshing to see. And when you see this from the starting position a few years ago, 2003 to now, it's a massive leap. In no way would I have thought, and going back to the stewards, would I have put myself in a position where I would be leading such a great team, being the chair of such a great team of people, of friends now, and calling them friends. No way on earth, no way. I'd have probably put money on myself leaving Freemasonry. And to be truthful, the diversity of Freemasonry is quite amazing, because Sol probably been there to Adassa Lodge. Adassa Lodge in Sheffield, which, when you see the diversity of that and how they do Freemasonry, even down to the festive board, I just thought, I need to stick around here a bit longer, because there is diverse, and it's winning. And it's been led, again, no arse leak, by the way, it's been led really well by David Pratt, who I think is such a approachable and amiable guy. I think he's leading it well, he's introducing people, doing the radical things as well. I think it's just we're in a good position at the moment, and hopefully, just by doing this forum and discussing this with you, it's going to spread the word.
We will point out you're in good company on this podcast, Trevor. That, yeah. The PGM was your warm-up act a couple of episodes ago.
Oh, wow.
And you're still on it, Josh, is the amazing thing.
Yeah. he somehow stayed.
Not even the PGM can get rid of me. Have it.
Well, I'm
following. That sounds like a challenge, Josh.
Yeah. Please don't. It's really not.
Well, no, I think we are in a better position to answer your question.
Right. Well, I think that pretty much rounds up tonight's episode. Wish for brother Trevor, thank you ever so much for coming along. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
Thank you.
And it was really good, obviously, to talk about two very important subjects. The latter conversation has been a long time coming, and it's one that we're all very happy to talk about. And we hope to have you on again at some point to perhaps discuss a little bit more.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking about the stewards, Matt, to be honest. Again, can't talk about them, hold them any higher than I possibly can. They're fantastic.
No, awesome. And again, thank you ever so much for everything that you guys do. While you're here, is there anyone you want to say hello to?
Yeah, all the stewards, obviously. I'll probably show my wife this, so to you, Julie. To my friends at St. Phillips, to all my friends in the Light Blues, CAG, Province, and to the people at St. Fitzwilliam Lodge, the Fire Service Lodge, and to the brethren at Ghoul Lodge as well, who absolutely gave me a fantastic night out that night. Thank you.
Thank you, Trevor. So with that, we're going to raise a glass to you.
Thank you
very much for coming along.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you.
And to Julie.
And all wives and partners that support everyone, because without them, we wouldn't be able to do what we do.
No pressure.
With that, I have been your host, Brother Matt Nemiria.
I am still Brother Josh Doherty Turnbull.
I'm always Brother Matthew Wharton.
I have the honour to be your honourable servant, Brother Dean Leach.
Evermore and always, Paul Rogers.
Proud to be a Freemason, Rick. Freemason, even. Saul Nyman.
It's been a pleasure to be part of this forum tonight from Worshipful Brother Trevor Bernard.
Good night, brethren.